welcome to the big show.
Yes. It's the same as ever. We're here to discuss the week in technology, and I've got a great bunch with me to start us off. Joining us to discuss the week in tech, top left, Paul Wheatley. How you doing, mate?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Now, talk us through the Pocket Show.
Oh, yes. It was very good. We've had one show in. There wasn't as much debate and piss taken as I would have liked, but
you're joking.
We'll get to that. No, there was. I don't know. I kind of wanted a little bit more arguing and stuff like that, but maybe I just got it. It was yourself and Carl and James, and maybe you were all just a little bit calm that night. But we'll maybe get a little bit more argument this week.
The platform wars are dead, according to Paul Kent from Macworld. So.
Say that again, sorry?
The platform wars are dead, according to Paul.
Maybe.
We'll
but I still like a little bit of debate and things like that, so we'll hopefully. Good. We've got another one this week.
Yeah, yep. Brilliant.
Yeah, Monday night.
Excellent. Next to him, Jeff Gamet, gin drinker extraordinaire.
But only the good stuff.
And
how are you doing?
You drink the gin neat, dude.
Well, it's because it's the good stuff. Yeah. I don't
impressed.
Go for any of that crap stuff where you have to put extra mixers in just to cut the flavor of the gin out.
And I do like gin and tonic, I have to say.
Life is too short for bad flavor alcohol.
Bronwyn in the chat room says that Sarah Jane is her new swear hero. Sarah dropped an F-bomb at the start. We'll see if we can get that up.
No.
Yeah, maybe.
No.
Maybe. Sarah at the bottom with the jumpy stuff and looking like she's a pirate at times. How you doing, girl?
Arr. I'll start talking like a pirate then, shall I? Arr.
What I'm missing is the black hat with
is
the...
a pirate stuff? From Norwich?
Yeah, it's like Sailor of the Century from live from Norwich.
Oh God! How the hell did they get the most? How the hell did they get Nicholas Parsons out to Norwich? I never know. And next to her, it's Paul Wright. For a sick note, how you doing, mate?
I've been better, mate.
Dude, I am. I gotta say, I am humbled by your dedication to this network because you feel like shit. All
I
the
do.
Tweets that you said you feel and look like shit, and you've still turned up to the show, mate. I'm humbled, as I say.
I do my best.
You're great, mate. Well done. So you're not in a good way. Any idea what's exactly wrong? Have you been to the doctor like I suggested you should on Twitter?
Of course I'm not. I'm a geezer.
You're an idiot. I'll go to the doctor.
I've got my mute button primed tonight because I might be hacking away.
Dude, I'm having trouble breathing. He's like, could be the last frigging tweet you ever send.
Yeah.
If it goes quiet, you know what happens.
I'm having trouble breathing. The next tweet is, I'm at the doctor's. Check in. I am the mayor of my local surgery.
I don't want to be the mayor of my local surgery. That's funny colour, though.
The week in tech, we'll get on to in a second. We've got some reviews. Thank you. We've had a review from Brazil.
Ooh.
Dwayne has retweeted. Now, you'll remember Dwayne, because Dwayne commented on the Mac show and in the Brazilian iTunes store, and we're like, wow, we've had a review from Brazil. And it turns out that Wayne actually was living in Leicester at the time. So it wasn't kind of. But this review is from Dwayne in Brazil. He did it in Brazil. He's back in Brazil living. Dwayne says, congratulations. The Big Show is a perfect podcast for those who like tech, science news. Additionally, it's very entertaining and you can have gems like radio-controlled Atari consoles, a guest eating Chili Peppers live, and ghosts of former BBC presenters. I don't even remember that episode. Actually, this show is much better if you download the video version and watch it live at the British Tech Network site. Ewan is a great host, by the way. Ewan, now you don't have a reason to be disappointed. I am living back in Brazil and not in Leicester. Huzzah!
I love a Brazilian.
You got to love a Brazilian. Absolutely. And moving on swiftly. We've had emails as well. And I've printed emails off just show them old tech. This is from Derek B., Hey, Ewan. The Windows 8 touch or no touch debate seems to be taking a lot of airtime. I suspect that's true generally, but not just on your show. I received my new laptop yesterday, a Lenovo with a touch screen, so I'm almost qualified to comment by now. My take on it, and what seems to be yours too, is that the user you should use whichever tool is applicable for the task at hand. The touchpad, the mouse, and the screen all do more or less the same thing, but we already use the touchpad or mouse depending on the situation. The touchscreen just adds another tool, and yes, dimension. Some apps, like maybe viewing photos or a presentation, might suit screen touching more than mousing, which sounds like it's a bad sexual practice, but never mind. You knew this already. I just wanted to chime in, putting in a slightly different words than you used, and say, shut up to the rest of the gang, because they mostly seem to be talking theoretically and not having actually used Windows 8. And I've got to defend Jeff here, because Jeff has. So there you go. And Adam did as well. So, and Sarah?
Yeah,
and me.
So none of it's theoretical. There you go. And when Leap Motion gets incorporated in a device, please don't let them start bitching again about how many choices for input they've got. Leap Motion, mate, couldn't even recognise my hands at all, let alone start directing it. So it's a piece of shite to start with. I'll go with that one.
Now, wait a second. Did they properly introduce their hands? Like, hands, this is Leap Motion. Leap Motion, these are my hands. If not, well, then how could Leap Motion ever recognize them? They don't know who they are. They're just strangers passing in the night.
And in my case, there was no chaperone in the room when I did it. So good point.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Be careful where you put your hands. I've heard that before. Regarding the straight to desktop options in Windows 8, if you right-click on the taskbar, properties, navigation, there's a bunch of new tick boxes. The tick box, show the app's view, does away with the tiles. It shows the apps as icons, albeit still in a tiley kind of way. But anyway, this is about as close as one gets to the old start menu. Assume you knew this already, but if not, I hope this helps. Thanks for sticking up for poor old Windows. There's so much naysaying, but it seems most of it is coming from the tossers that haven't even used it. So I'm with you. Windows 8 may be the best version yet, particularly the stuff that's under the skin. Thanks for the show, Derek. Cheers, Derek. Thanks very much. I've had another one. Ewan, please stop trying to make out that you love Windows when we all know you're brown-nosing Tim Cook constantly. Love, Rob.
Now, what you and Tim do in the privacy of your own room is your business. No one is judging. And, you just get on with your badass self.
And the last one. Oi, Rankin, you're a wanker. I could fit what you know about... I fit what you could know about tech on a pinhead. That's from QSLR_droid. Didn't even use his right name.
Well, obviously, it's the biggest flimming pinhead we've ever seen, then, isn't it?
I may not know a lot about tech, but I know a twat when I see one. the week in tech, what have we got? Stories. It's a bring a story party as ever. I'm going to start top left with Wheaters.
So the story that I wanted to talk about was this thing that came out, was it 3 days ago, day before yesterday?
Maybe? I don't want to see you thunder do, but this is a horrific story.
It is. I think it's interesting in that the, so if you haven't heard about this, basically what this is a gentleman, I'm going to make a really awful attempt to pronounce his name, Nakai Hiroshima, I think. He had the Twitter handle @N. So just a single character, and supposedly,
which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. So supposedly he's been offered like $50,000 for it and stuff like that in the past, which I actually think is quite cheap. I would have expected he would have been offered a lot more than this. Basically, he had it taken away from him by a hacker managing to get into his GoDaddy account, and he basically held all the websites he had in his GoDaddy account hostage in exchange for this Twitter handle. And as soon as the story kind of goes into quite a bit of back and forth between Nakai and the hacker, but basically he ended up just giving the access to this @N Twitter account, and the hacker gave him all his websites back. I mean, no harm, no foul at that stage. And I mean, that's pretty awful. But I think the interesting thing that kind of drew me into the story was Nakai, Mr. Hiroshima, however. Email,
at
N. Sorry?
At N.
At N. Yeah, okay, that's easier, yeah.
The real at N.
Yeah, the real admin went back to him and said, so how did you actually do this? And the hacker actually came back and explained exactly how he did it in quite a level of detail, and actually suggested ways that he could get away with, sort of get around this in the future and not be attacked by this in the future, which is incredible. But I mean, essentially what happened is he phoned up PayPal, managed to get the four characters, the last four digits of his credit card.
Well, I mean, this is the most worrying thing. How much four digits it means to the world. PayPal gave out on the phone his last four digits of his credit card.
Yep. That's insane. It's ridiculous.
Yep. That is utter. That is negligence. There's no other word for that. You can't sweeten that.
But then again, he went to GoDaddy, this chap with his last four digits, and GoDaddy allowed him to guess. And it sort of implied that he had a multiple goes at this, but let him guess the previous two numbers. So basically, GoDaddy's security was based around the last six digits of his credit card number. So, I mean, I can't do that math, but I can imagine he probably only needed to phone up half a dozen times and guess three or four times before he got in, but supposedly managed it on the first try. But I think this is incredible. I think what's now happened is, and I can't actually find an article that confirms this, but I heard on the Daily Tech News Show, Tom Merritt Show this morning, that Twitter's actually stepped in and both the @N account is now frozen. I don't think it's back in this gentleman's hands yet, but I believe it's frozen, but I haven't seen anything to confirm that. But
it's private at the moment, and it's only got 34 followers on it or something. So
yeah, but that's not the guy. So he's now taken the Twitter handle N_is_stolen. So, I find this awesome.
Yeah, which is kind of like skinny, no use whatsoever.
it's good that that Twitter have actually done that. But the more worrying thing, as you say, is the fact that they were able to use these slightly covert, but not that difficult means to actually get into the GoDaddy account in the first place. They're the ones that really ought to be. And PayPal as well.
Well, no, PayPal are at the root of the issue because they allowed the four-digit code out, and you only need six digits at GoDaddy to get your account discussed on the phone. So
that's ridiculous, isn't it?
It really is. But I think another thing that kind of... Sorry, Jeff, I spoke over the top of you.
Go, Jeff.
Oh, no, I was just saying this is absolutely horrible.
It really is. I'm kind of a little bit more sensitive to this because I was very recently subject to a similar hacking because it wasn't my Twitter handle, but hackers managed to get into my wife's bank account just about 2 weeks ago. And so I've become very, very aware of all this kind of stuff going on, and just the ways and means that they can get into these accounts is just incredible.
Now, the only thing about that story, Paul, because that's in ancient past, and I'm sure you've recovered it all.
Yesterday, we finally got the last of it back yesterday.
Wow, good man, good man. So I feel okay in taking the piss then now. Now you've got it all back. Your window cleaner, how clean are your windows?
Yeah, he got £3,000, my window cleaner.
dude, it's like, I want you to lick my windows clean from now on, please.
Well, you see, that was the really cool thing about this scam. And I mean, it was awful at the time, don't get me wrong, but I find it really, really interesting. So basically what the hackers did to my wife's accounts was they managed to get into her email account. They then managed to get in her online banking. They then matched up the recipients that had already been set up in her online banking with addresses she had in her email, transferred money to these recipients, and then sent an email from her email address saying, my account has been hacked. My account has now been closed. Please send the money to this new bank account. And it was the hacker's bank account details.
Jesus.
Oh, that's
poor.
So simple and so clever at the same time.
It really is, yeah. I know.
I think the one thing that comes out of the end story, and I've acted upon this almost instantly after reading it, Barry Collins tweeted it out when I first saw it. And the real issue that the guy said was, don't have any of your recovery passwords sent to domain registered emails.
Yeah.
So send them to your Gmail and you're pretty much safe because they can't get into the Gmail.
Assuming you've got two-factor authentication.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you go to, your email is my company's Ography Squared. If you go to that and you register anything that, that says, right, okay, verify your email through Ogilvy Squared, once they've actually got into the stage of holding on to your domain, that's when you're screwed. And that's when GoDaddy really let this guy down, because he had, they got into the domain that he'd registered with GoDaddy, and at that point, then he's locked out completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's scary.
You're right about say like Gmail being much stronger because of the two-factor authentication, but there is still a weak link there, and that is obviously if you lose your phone or someone steals your phone, and you haven't got a particularly good way of locking the phone, then you know, even PIN numbers, it's not that difficult to work that out. You know, it's there is a potential weak link. Obviously, you know, it still doesn't need physical access, but the thing
is about this is that I'm not even sure two-factor authentication would have helped here necessarily, because it wasn't a hardware or software backdoor or anything like that the hacker used. It was social engineering. They phoned up and spoke to a woman on the phone or a man on the phone and just convinced them that they genuinely were them and that they'd lost their credit card. And no amount of security that you put in hardware and software-wise is going to get around somebody being able to be very, very good at social engineering when they got on the phone with some kind of customer representative.
See, social engineering is people attacking my mother. You know, let's be clear about that. Social engineering is about dibbing on people that are prone to clicking on porn links, etc., etc. It's not about the people that should be at the end of the frigging companies that are there to protect me. So GoDaddy, I'm sorry, there is no way in any universe that I've got any concept of that a GoDaddy representative should be socially engineered out of the last four credit card details or the last two on to make the six. That's not good enough by any stretch of the imagination. No. And it's not an excuse to say, oh, well, you know, they were very clever. They made very plausible excuses. There are no excuses. Do you know the numbers or don't you? Because if you don't, piss off.
Yeah. But it's very much like, was it Matt Honan? A couple of years ago, he had his that was for a Twitter account as well.
Yeah, but that was very cleverly done because of the last four digits, and wasn't it? They did the
they hacked at the way through Amazon and Apple, wasn't it?
No, but it was because I can't remember the exact thing, but it was basically one showed the last four digits and one didn't show the last four digits, it showed everything else. So when you were asked for a prompt, it showed you all of your card details except the last four digits. And when you went to the Apple account, it showed you a load of X's with your last four digits, or vice versa. Right.
So you could get the whole thing.
So you could get the whole thing by going to one of the other.
One thing this really makes me think about, though, is I know that obviously there was some years ago we moved from this thing of on receipts printing credit card numbers to printing just the last four digits with a load of stars. But why do we need that at all? I mean, I can appreciate it from the point of view of you need some form of way to say, okay, fine, you know which card it is. But why can't we have something that just says the name of the card?
Well, because you could have multiple accounts. You could have multiple accounts with that bank. You could also have two cards on the same account. So you could have like a husband and a spouse or whatever having the same card in that account.
The name on the receipt as well, haven't you? So why would you... I think there's other ways of identifying the card without actually necessarily printing the card number on it.
But there's all the unique ways of identifying the card, not just giving up another element of security on that card, though.
Yeah, I suppose. It's just that the credit card number is so vital. Yeah, so I wonder why we make it so easy. I know everyone seems to think, oh, the last four digits, that doesn't mean anything. But this clearly shows that there is a way of compromising it. You can get some information.
Yeah, definitely.
The chat room's gone off, as you might imagine. iBookery says, I don't like doing banking over email. It gives me the willies. Why the hell would you do banking over email?
I can't imagine. Holy crap.
Jesus, dude. The other lesson is don't use GoDaddy, says Smell-O-Vision. Use UK2. Yeah, we know that one already. Dead set, no GoDaddy. Nobody can guess 1, 2, 3, 4 as a pin, says Bookery.
I should change my pin right now.
Now's the time to mention UK2, he says as well. Jufro Jim says, what porn links does your mother click on, Ewan? And
best you leave that one.
I have no idea. Apparently, most of the emails I get suggest that, my parents weren't married at the time anyway. Toby says, you're right, Ewan. This should be day one of their training. No more mum jokes, says Smellovision. Thank you. Is your mum social engineering? Maybe not. Improving security. Don't know what he means, though, but fair enough. Thank you very much. I think I've got to say that was one of the stories that was actually horrific this week. And it wasn't the fact that he got swindled out of it, because there are people out there that will swindle out of people out of it, everything. You walk down with a camera in your hand and someone will walk up with a pair of scissors and cut the cord off it and walk away with the camera. That's not the issue. The issue is that the institutions that you trust to not give out your shit gave out your shit. And PayPal gave out 4 digits of a credit card number. There is no getting away from that. And GoDaddy let you guess the other two. Shame. Shame, shame, shame. Good story, mate. I thought that was an immense story this week. And very sad as well. And I know we had you on the other week to talk about what happened with you, but you forgot.
I know.
He got so wrapped up in enjoying the show, he forgot to mention the story he was on the show to talk about. Never mind.
Yeah. It's all sorted out now.
I mentioned it, but I just want to apologise, actually, last week. If anyone thought there was any jumps in the big show, there was, because I'm an idiot. They kind of populated themselves in the timeline, and I forgot to get rid of the bleeps, and it was crap last week. That was a waste of time. So I do apologise. Rushing to try and get them out so that the offer code for Macworld still held. Jeff, what have you brought for us, sir?
Well, how about if I go with, instead of horrible, I go with ludicrous. And okay, so what should be the big story out of what I have is that the Mars Curiosity rover found a rock in front of it that wasn't there before. So it took a photo of a space right in front of where it's sitting. And then the next time it takes a photo of the same place, there's an extra rock there that it wasn't there before. So that raises all kinds of questions about, holy crap, how did a rock get put in front of the rover when it wasn't there before? So all kinds of different speculation about well, maybe there was some sort of impact that by coincidence they ended up with a rock that was ejected from the impact landing right in front of the rover. What seems most likely is that because one of the wheels isn't working correctly, as it spun, it kicked up a rock and it ended up landing in front of the rover after the photo was taken.
What's interesting is that the little circle on the picture on the left corresponds directly with the circle on the right of the donut thing.
So, yeah, it kind of does. So, all right. So, anyhow, this in and of itself is a very interesting story because we have this mystery on this planet where there are no people. How did this rock end up in front of the rover? So NASA has some ideas, and it's very clearly a rock sitting there. But there's this guy that is certain this is a life form and that NASA is intentionally covering it up so that we don't know that there's alien life out there. So he has sued NASA.
No.
Yes, he has filed a lawsuit against NASA to make them perform all kinds of analysis on this rock that's just sitting there in front of the rover. And he wants them to take it. It's something ridiculous, like over 1,000
photographs. What possible harm is he coming to by them not doing this analysis?
It's the man bringing him down. I don't know. It's really, I mean, this guy is just...
If you want to sue somebody, you've got to have lost something. What the hell has he lost?
his little alien friend on Mars.
Exactly. There we go. Yeah. My pen pal on Mars is no longer.
Yeah. God. And so anyhow.
And the voices in my head have gone silent.
And it's sad and lonely when the voices aren't there.
It is. No, it's true. Apparently their actions were, and I quote, inexplicable, recklessly negligent, and bizarre.
Yes.
I've taken a car, I've sent it 500 million miles or whatever it is to Mars, and it's taken me over half a year to get it there. I've landed it safely despite all the odds. Something inexplicable turns up on a photo and you want me to start then dealing with
lawyers. Apparently so.
I think not.
The focus of the story is completely wrong, isn't it? We're focusing on this silly potential court case when it's like the achievement of getting this thing to actually land should be the big focus, surely.
NASA's about the only government agency in America I trust.
Yeah,
can't see that. You can't see that.
I might be traveling. You might be traveling on your own in March, Paul.
Yep, get the rubber gloves out now.
Just mention my name, Ewan.
Proper mining.
They'll hopefully at least be gentle.
When the TSA agent that I've got is elbow deep inside me, mate, I'll say, but you know you're thinking of Jeff.
And there'll be the little tear in his eye, and he'll be like, yeah, I am.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Jeff.
Yeah, they're growing the nails already.
Yeah. Okay, so completely off our regular topic. On one of the trips that I took, I fly often enough that the TSA agents recognize me when I'm going through security. And so this one guy, because I always get a pat down every single time. So he's feeling me up and we're having that awkward moment where he's grabbing my junk and I said, you know, we do this often enough. You should be buying me flowers. And he stops. And the problem for me was he stops and he's kind of like this, forgetting that he still has me in his grasp. And he goes, yeah, I probably should. And then continued on with his pat down. He still hasn't bought me flowers.
I won't be coming to Colorado then.
I think if you ever did say that, I think you'd be in a lot of trouble.
No.
You know, well, once you've been felt up enough by the same TSA agent, you kind of have a rapport, and you can get away with little lines like that.
Well, no, I've got to say, there's different. There's TSA as TSA does. I mean, flying in through Newark, the TSA agents there weren't pleasant at all. And flying through Michigan, through Detroit, they were grand. They were absolutely brilliant, lovely, lovely people. But so we'll have to wait and see.
I can say that most of my experiences of flying into the US, which are through LAX, are not particularly pleasant.
Well, there you go. You're not getting in, and I'm not endorsing your comments because I want to get in for Macworld.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't mention my name.
Yeah, I know people. I know Jeff Gamet. What are you going to do about that? Hey ho!
Yeah,
yeah. You mining for bitcoins, boy?
Celery.
Network Union. Click on their link off the sponsor page. Don't go direct to their site. Make sure you do it through us, because otherwise we don't get the kudos, and then they won't want to stay with us after that year. Sarah, what's your story? Interesting one, I think.
As you probably, I'm sure everyone's aware by now, about 9 o'clock yesterday, our time, Google announced that they'd done a deal with Lenovo to sell Motorola, which came as a bit of a surprise, considering it was less than 2 years since they actually sold it, since they bought it in the first place. And From what I can understand, it seems that the price was considerably less. But having sort of looked into it in a bit more detail, it seems that Google are actually planning on hanging on to most of the patents.
This is a surprise.
Yeah, I know. And I think it's clear that that's why they actually bought, why they probably bought it and the real thing was what they wanted was the patents, which I can. They were pretty clear
about that from the beginning.
Yeah, definitely.
I
mean, they were making very very blatant statements about they wanted the patent portfolio. They were going to use it to shore up Android and to defend their intellectual property. It was very clear what they wanted was the patents right from the beginning.
If you take the patents away, though, surely Motorola is a in value terms is a day-to-day business. And you'd look at the current Moto G and say, well, that's a great phone, and at 160 quid ish or something like that, sim free, $200 sim free, $300 sim free, it's a great buy, and everyone that I've seen says it is a fantastic phone. But that is a day-to-day business. There's no investment for the future in that. There's no long-term investment process. Yeah, so 2.1 billion is an awful lot if you're going to hold on to the patents.
2.9.
As a production business, it's not worth 2.1 billion.
2.9.
2.9 billion.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the Moto X, which is more at market, which I think Google were definitely subsidizing. I think they were struggling to make a market, which is, funny enough, that is actually due out in the UK on Saturday. And I was actually looking at buying one as my next phone, but this deal has kind of put that on hold.
Well, Barry Collins has been on here, and he says the Moto G is a fantastic phone for a budget price. At sim free at 160 quid, it is. It's unmatchable.
The Moto X, I believe, is going to be around 380 in the UK, which, considering most of the other phones of that ilk from Samsung are around the 500-600 if you want them off contract, is a pretty good deal. But for me, the big thing, and you know, I've had my Nexus S now for 3 years, and the phone I'm looking at buying, I want to have for a similar amount of time. And for me, the key thing is having that Google experience. So the next phone has to be that. And this has made me think twice about doing that.
Yeah.
I was excited to see where they were going to go with kind of the Moto G and the Moto X. And I thought that might have kind of, I think I've covered it in a show before, it might have paved the way for, you know, things like Apple doing things like the 5C, bringing those prices down. But I don't know if Lenovo are going to carry that on, because I think they do a lot more of their sales in China, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, the Moto G and the Moto X brands have gone to Lenovo as part of this deal. So we've really got to wait and see what Lenovo are planning to do with it. My guess is that because there's recently been a deal between Google and Samsung, a 10-year deal, I wouldn't be surprised that selling off Motorola was part of that deal.
That wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point from Toby in the chat room. He says, yeah, bought it, kept all the good stuff and selling it off as a husk. But he says, plus owning a phone manufacturing firm made other companies nervous of Android.
Exactly.
And Jeff, you've put down that you've nailed that. And I think that is a good point, that you know, if your OS manufacturer suddenly owns a hardware manufacturer, you've got to think, well, where do I sit? And I think that's one of the problems that the Surface has had with Microsoft. Yes, it's a great product. They're showing how it's done. But if you're making hardware and software, all the other companies are going, well, why am I still staying loyal to you?
One of the things I'm really hoping that does happen, though, is that part of that deal that Samsung and Google have done is one of the issues I think we all have, and a lot of people have with Samsung, is the crud that gets put on that phone.
Yeah.
I want a pure Google experience. And I'm hoping that part of this deal is they say, okay, fine, well, we might sell, we're looking at maybe selling Motorola, but we want you to get the next version of Android.
But Google isn't going to stop selling its Nexus line from whoever produces it. It will still be Google hardware in inverted commas.
Yeah, but who's to say they're going to continue with Nexus?
Yeah, but they never did a Nexus with Motorola, because that's what the one thing people were expecting them to do.
Yeah, yeah. It was always LG, wasn't it, that did the Nexus?
Yeah, they've done the last two, haven't they?
Yeah.
And the Nexus S, which I've got, is a Samsung phone. The Nexus 10, I can't remember. I think it's a Nexus. Sorry, I think it's a Samsung device.
Yeah, the Nexus 1 was HTC, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm. See, well, one of the other things that's interesting is that the Motorola business outside of the mobile handset market used to be Scion scanners. Mm. And Scion scanners are huge in terms of corporate expansion. I did a lot of work at a facility, and I still get emails from Motorola Industrial saying that they want to sell me hand scanners. When I just said I wanted some pictures of some hand scanners to go in a brochure, and that was it. So I had to write to their corporate department, but I still get emails from them that says that that Motorola still owns, and it's not part of Google, the handset scanning division. So it's going to a certain degree, it's fracturing Motorola even further now by selling it onto Lenovo, perhaps.
Yeah, Lenovo did good things when they took over IBM's laptop division, though. I think Lenovo could actually make a little bit of a go at this.
Yeah.
If anyone could, it's Lenovo.
Yeah. They've got the capability of being a serious contender for Samsung, which I think can only be good in the Android marketplace.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, like you say, you know, with Microsoft with the Surface kind of, you know, muddying the waters with their partners, Lenovo's kind of done some of the best kind of hybrid devices for Windows 8. So they have actually taken that market and accelerated, I think. And I think without some of the Lenovo products, Windows 8 wouldn't be as prevalent as it is now.
Mm. Lenovo also took over another part of IBM server division towards the beginning of this week. They're in a bit of a spending spree, sort of under the radar at the moment.
Mm. A bit like Google.
Well, Lenovo have got a long history since they took over IBM, as you say there, of producing quality products. Mm-hmm. The ThinkPad has carried on, and actually with the same case mouldings.
Yeah, it looks exactly the same.
Exactly.
Yeah, it does.
It's like a Kalashnikov, isn't it? I mean, or an AK-47 or something.
Yeah.
It works. Don't screw with it.
Do you think the it might be completely unrelated, but with the recent acquisition of Nest and Tony Fadell with his hardware design pedigree, for want of a better word, coming in, I don't know if it's related necessarily, but will we see something happen here? They've cut off Motorola and they're now going to kind of put Tony Fadell in and really build up the Nexus, line now, now that they can kind of focus and they can be a bit more laser focused. Or is it just coincidence? It's all happened at the same time.
It's certainly a possibility. It would certainly be interesting with the Nest stuff. Is obviously slightly different area, but I mean, I'd love to see them do more with that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they have some big plans for Nest.
It'd be good. Now, Sarah, I have to call you up here because Ross on Twitter has updated us on the Marmite fiasco with Canada.
Ah, yes, I understand. Apparently, there was a clarification of this that...
Your story last week was a bit awry.
Well, it was, but at the time we believed it to be true. But apparently the Canadian customs or government, or I don't know which part of the government it was, were a bit upset about this and actually clarified the situation and said that it wasn't actually banning Marmite and Iron Brew, I think, was the other thing as well. So well, that's
good news. Good news.
I'm very relieved as well.
Thank God.
Yeah. That's our best export.
Well, I've still got to try and get some Marmite over to Adam to try when we're in
Francisco. I was going to try and get some Iron Brew over, but...
We're better off posting it ahead of time, I think, because if we try and smuggle it in, we'll end up with a cavity search, mate.
Yeah.
Because
that's what you want, then pack the Marmite.
Send it to Jeff. He's getting a cavity search anyway.
Yeah, so we might as well get some value out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And he does know the TSA officers very well, as he's made very clear. So.
Oh, and they know me very well.
Inside and out.
Yeah, I'm just worried one of these times I'll be going through security and a TSA guy is going to go like, oh, there's a lump that wasn't there before. You should get that checked.
Hey, kill two birds with one stone.
It's a service.
There's a record card with your colon on it.
There probably is.
That's a different establishment, though.
Yeah, we can go.
Right. And actually, I think it links back to a German porn site.
Moving on swiftly. Yeah. Righty, what have you got for us, boy?
Well, I've been watching it with kind of. I don't know, delight or dismay, but a company I used to love and respect in my youth was Nintendo. It looks like they're going into free fall a bit because obviously, I think, as we all know, the Wii U hasn't really sold. In the last 5 years, they've sold less Wii U's than PS4's and Xbox One's in the first 2 months. And it came out this month that all their kind of executive team were taken kind of huge pay cuts as kind of a penance for this, this kind of failure. They've also slashed their 2014 forecast from 9 million Wii U's down to 2.8. And you think, well, what could you do now? And obviously they're not in the hardware business, and everyone's just screaming out saying, you know, you've got this huge back catalogue of games and titles that you could really, you know, Sega did it, you know, because they get out of the hardware business, and they seem to be plodding along on all the consoles and on iOS and Android. And they had a briefing this week, and what they should have come out and said, yes, we're going to do this, we're going to release these catalogues. They said, no, what we're actually going to do, we're going to release a virtual console for DS games on the Wii U. And do they just not get it? Do they are they really that out of touch with what's going on?
Yes, they are that out of touch. Absolutely. They're that out of touch.
They are, but they have also said they've went backwards and forwards in this two or three times, because one time you're hearing that it's going to be on mobile devices, then you're hearing they're not. And on the, it was kind of a footnote on the press conference thing that they did last night, but Iwata said that he's put together like a small team who have not been given any direction, but they've not been given any limitations either. And right. So they've basically been given open scope to do whatever they want with whatever Nintendo property they want. And so some people are reading that as they've said that they're not making plans to go into mobile devices, but equally they aren't expressly not going onto mobile devices.
Surely it's got to be the way to go, though, hasn't it? Because it's just proved that the 3DS really didn't sell as well as they'd hoped as well. So the handheld market is more going towards mobile gaming. So they've got these kind of titles that would make them a lot of money. They've got
it. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay, Nintendo's big problem is that they're trying to make the business model that Apple uses work for them, which is you're the whole thing. And Apple's nailed it. They can be the front end to the back end, the hardware, the software. They can be the whole thing. But Nintendo hasn't been able to really be successful with that business model. And I think what they need to do is realize that there's a lot of iPhone and iPad owners out there that would pay to be able to play Mario Kart and so many other titles that they have. Mm-hmm. But they can't because they don't have a little Wii thing, and they're not going to go buy it. And I just realized what I said, and it sounds really kind of funny.
No, but you've got to say that the way you're portraying that, Jeff, and the way you're saying it is it kind of sounds like they're not going to make that move until it's too late.
That's what I'm afraid of. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's the key. They will do it. They will do it at some point. All of Mario and etc. will go onto the iPad, but it'll be too little too late. And there's a good point from Toby in the chat room here. Jeff or Jim saying about iPad, the Mario brand is strong. Why is not Mario an iPad? And Toby says, I agree, but does Mario sell consoles? And I don't think Mario sells consoles. He sells games at best.
See, I think they're still hanging their hat on the fact that Mario sold consoles in the 80s. And to a degree, they sold the Dreamcast and things like that in the 90s. But I don't think it has. But I think with these rumors that are currently circulating with the Apple TV potentially opening up to gaming, and we've got the Bluetooth iOS gamepads kind of surfacing, I would buy everything that Nintendo fired at me that was from the 80s. So like Jurassic Park games, the Zelda games from the SNES and the NES, all the Mario games and things like that. If they could release those on iPhone or iPad that I could use with a joypad, and I think that's the key, they have to be used on a joypad. These games would not port well over to a touch device if you were expected to use the touch device as the controller. I don't think they would work. So I kind of help but think that if they have a plan, and I totally agree with everything everybody's saying that Nintendo don't have a plan. if they have a plan, I think if this drops and the Apple TV gets joypad support and gaming support, then not far behind that, we will start to see these games. If they have a plan.
Because iOS 7's got the controller support now, hasn't it? So
Although they're coming out kind of questionable.
The base is there for them to just take it on, isn't it? They've got so many games they could just release. It's, you know, I think a lot of the old Sega games have been really popular on iOS, haven't they?
And on the Wii as well, interestingly.
Again, Toby's making points in the chat room about calling it the Wii U was a bad idea to start with. because the majority of consumers see the Wii U as a controller for the Wii. So they thought, well, why do I need to buy it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim in the chat room is just pointing something out, and it's something that MG Siegler wrote a post on I can't remember what it was. And basically, it was a little £99 emulator brick that played all your old games. I think that's a really good idea, but why do that if they've got access to that on the Apple TV?
Mm-hmm.
Do it, wouldn't you?
Interestingly, as well, they announced another console they're releasing in 2015 and 16. Did you see that?
No.
I didn't see that, no. What?
No. It's focusing on health.
The Nintendo 1DS.
No, it's just focusing on health. It's basically the Wii Fit, but as a completely standalone console. They really have their finger on the pulse, Nintendo.
So
interestingly, though,
wait a
you say that
as a console, not as a wearable technology.
No, I mean, to be fair, they didn't go into too much detail, but the way it was worded, it definitely sounded like they were essentially releasing the Wii Fit with a Wii as a console in 2015-16.
So, you know, Ellis has got a Nintendo DS, and he said, oh, I can have a 3DS. And I'm like, well, there's the issues with the eyes. I'm not so sure. And really, you're quite happy with what you got. And he's all right. Yeah, all right, I am, Dad. It's fine. But the 2DS, I thought, was a masterstroke. Because anyone that's got the issues over, well, I'm not so sure you should have the 3DS, son, because of the questions over the eyes, would buy the 2DS and play all the 3D games anyway and all the stuff that was on the DS, and it wouldn't matter. And interestingly, at Christmas, when we said to Bryony, what do you want for Christmas? She said, I want a 2DS. Now, we haven't talked about 2DS. She hasn't listened to this show, so she didn't know about 2DS. But she knew about 2DS, and she knew that 2DS would play the 3DS games and the DS games, and she's 4 years old.
Yeah.
So whatever they've done in marketing terms for the 2DS...
Let's get her on the show.
Exactly. Yeah. It's worked properly because she knows. She knew that she wanted it, and she got one, and she's happy as Larry, and it was a good price, £99. Fantastic. All of Ellis's DS games will work on it if she wants to play them, and any of the 3DS games that are on market, she can use those and play them as well. Sounds very, very well done. The only problem with the console was that it didn't fold in half like all the others did. But
that's the first thing that fails in them.
Is the folding, yeah.
Yeah, that's the first thing that goes. We've had a number of DSs, 3DSs in this house, and that's the first thing that goes, is that fold. But it's good equally, because would the screen maybe crack quicker if it had landed in the ground or something?
Yeah. But I thought the 2DS would be selling hand over fist, to be honest, because it's a very, very good console, and it takes a nice little picture as well. I was quite impressed with the photos of it.
I think the problem with the 2DS is, while I agree with what you're saying, I don't remember the last time I put my 3DS into 3D mode. I play it as a 2 double screen console. But the problem is that market not relatively saturated now? You are going to have your kids, age of Briny and things like that, coming in and wanting those consoles. But the majority of anybody from kind of 6 to 12 and myself who wanted those, I've probably got them by now, or they've moved to an iPod Touch or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's a big thing. I think a lot of people have just gone to the iPod Touch instead.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking of the iPod, did anyone see the story apparently that saying that what is the iPod not long for this world?
Well, that happens. That story comes up pretty much every quarter after Apple's earnings reports, because they don't really talk about iPod figures anymore. And yeah, so of course its days are numbered, because I'm going to guess it's like probably 2% of Apple's revenue, and over time the solid state storage will continue to drop in price, and then they'll be able to make something like the iPod Classic that has that high capacity storage in solid state. And when that happens, the traditional iPod line will just be gone.
Do you see the iPad is a bit more like the Classic, though? The capacity will increase, the functions there, the form factor as the screen is there. So they will continue with it as though the Classic was still going.
Well, I think they've put out the price range. With the latest iteration, they've jumped up to £250. Now, when I bought Morgan, my daughter, her iPod Touch, must have been about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. Mm. There's no way I paid £249 for it. I can't remember what it was, but It was significantly less than that.
About 169, wasn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
They have the lower priced iPod Touch now. The 16 gig without a camera.
Yeah, but that's basically the last generation, though, isn't it? It's not current gen. There's lots of things missing on it.
Apparently, Tim Cook said when he was announcing the figures for Apple that sales of the iPod are down 52% on this time last year.
Well, see, my daughter wanted the latest iPod Touch for Christmas this year, and we managed to talk her out of it because it actually was cheaper for her to get an iPhone. Not a recent iPhone, I grant you, but an iPhone. And she wanted to get the latest iPod Touch so she could have a better camera and things like that. And I was able to get her an iPhone 4S for significantly cheaper than a brand new iPod Touch.
I think you nailed it. That's it. Isn't it? Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, no, good one. My story is basically, if you're an O2 user, stiff shit. Because the price is going up.
Tell me about it, Ewan. I know I'm well aware of it.
In February, the small print means that you can't get out of your contract and your prices are going to go up by roughly 3.2%.
Ooh.
Very exact. Wow. If you pay £20 a month on your new bill, it's now going to be £20.64. And your bill is currently £30, then you're going to be £30.96. Text, calls and minutes will cost the same and your allowances aren't changing. Mobile broadband deals are unaffected. 28th of February, it's off and running.
Wow. That's
bad luck.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't see how this is very good. I mean, they're talking about one of the clauses in the contract that says that they can change with 30 days notice any of the prices that are within your fixed contract. So if you signed up for a £20 deal, there is no way of you saying, well, hang on, I signed up for a £20 deal. Stiff shit, you're paying £20.64 and that's it. But also, it didn't, this is off the top of my head, didn't Ofcom cap prices?
Yeah. It's something similar as well.
At the end of last year, the last quarter, they said that they were satisfied with pricing and they didn't see that prices should extend. And O2 are not the cheapest to start with. In terms of their allowances, if you look at Three Network, Three is significantly better in terms of calls, data, and texts per pound than O2. And I thought that Ofcom capped, but I could be wrong.
They justified it, apparently, if I remember from the text that I got from them, for something to do with inflation.
Well, inflation hasn't been 3.2% since the 80s.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I thought. It sounded a bit of a dodgy argument when I saw the text.
They also talked about the fact that they wanted to invest £10 million in infrastructure because they had two frigging dropouts that nearly crippled the UK last year through providing an inadequate service to start with. I can't see how they can justify an offset £10 million against that. It's not inflation and it's not investment in infrastructure. Bull. I'm calling BS.
Did sound a bit dodgy to me.
Yeah, it's possibly a time for it to have a look at if you like the O2 network. Saw, and I'm just trying to bring it up here. But if you like the O2 network, I saw earlier today that Tesco Mobile that use the O2 network are currently offering free 4G, so you don't have to pay extra for 4G. I don't actually know if they're. I've never used Tesco Mobile, but if you like the O2's network. They've got that offer on. I think I'm just trying to find something that.
I think
yeah, they dropped their prices.
Don't Three's network piggyback off Two's? Well, do they piggyback off EE? I think they piggyback off Two O2, but
could you Three?
Three piggyback off O2.
Did they really?
Yeah, I think so.
I thought Three had their own network because they built it.
Well, I think they have in places, but not all over.
Yeah. Ah. Mm.
Because I'm just looking at The Guardian, and they reported last Thursday that Ofcom's now saying consumers can now leave their telephone internet provider mid-contract if bills are increased.
There you go.
Yeah, but then this is the interesting thing, is that they've got clauses in the contract that say they can change it with 30 days' notice, which they are suggesting would overwrite anything that Ofcom says. And if you go to a court, if you sign a contract that says you could change, then change is changing.
That's pretty crappy.
Well, we've kind of excluded you a little bit there, Jeff, because it's a hugely and wholly UK provider. But I mean, If you changed your contract mid-term with your provider in the States, there'd be uproar, I presume.
I don't think that providers can change you mid-contract in the United States. If you're going to have a rate increase of any kind, it happens when your current contract is up, or like if you're getting a new phone partway through your contract and so you have to renew your contract, then they can change it. But they can't make changes to the rates and services that you're getting mid-contract.
No. I mean, chat room's off on one. Going up again, Sysmellovision? Question mark. Didn't they go up in September, Sysmellovision? Yes, but they're going up again. And three all the way, says Paulums and Jeffro.
This is one of the reasons why, apart from, well, though obviously it's, you know, not supposed to be happening, one of the reasons why I prefer buying a phone off contract.
Yeah, I
did that as well.
I bought one on contract for 10 years.
I learned that lesson 3 years ago.
Yeah,
I just do SIM only as well, and I buy my phones outright. It's far better.
Bite the bullet at the start with spending £300-400 or whatever, and then you can move around as you want.
Well, I mean, at the moment, if you want an off SIM phone, you can get one from Tesco Mobile that's unlocked for £40, and you can get one of their SIM locked ones for less than £20. And if you go to the Moto G, £160 gets you a complete SIM-free phone with Android KitKat on it, I think it is. And world's your oyster.
Exactly.
Go out and buy what you fancy. So it's a buyer's market at the moment in the mobile industry. Don't get locked into a contract. You're wasting your time, definitely. It's always worth spending the money buying SIM-free. I started doing it with the... Do you remember the T61 or the T63? Nokia Ericsson phone. It was a little flip phone that had a little stubby aerial on the top.
Oh, yeah.
Good times.
Is that the one that played solitaire?
It might have done. Play solitaire, I mean, it played Snake, that's Snake, for sure. And it had a really... I bought it because it had a really piercing ringtone because the facility I was working in three times a week that time was really noisy. But that was... that cost me like £500, and I'm going back a long time, back to 2002.
Oh, I couldn't have a phone then.
Yeah. And I bought that SIM free.
Court order.
And since then, I've never bought a subsidised deal. I've always bought SIM free.
Yeah.
Because I realised then it wasn't worth it.
It may seem cheaper, but it isn't worth it to go for the subsidised phone.
Yeah. The thing is, as well, never underestimate your ability to walk out of the shop and go bollocks. That's the thing. And when you've got a SIM free phone in your hand, you go, what's he doing for calls and data and texts? And they tell you, and you go, nah, I'm off. And they say, and then you say, well, I'd like a new SIM, please. And they go, well, you've got to sign up for 12 months. I think you'll find Ofcom says I don't. Yeah. If I'm just getting a SIM change, I don't have to sign up for 12 months. You know, sorry. SIM only deal, 30 days tops. That's it. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, the deal I have, although I use O2, the deal I have was negotiated exactly along those lines.
Yeah. Bastards.
Absolutely.
This podcast and all the others is supported by UK2. And the chat room, when I did the Network Union advert earlier, they all said, oh, so no UK2. Yeah, we've still got UK2. Network Union are going to pick up all of the broadband into the house where I broadcast from, the office. But UK2 are still picking up all the bandwidth on the servers at the other end. So they're still supporting us. That's not going to go away. They're with us for an indefinite future, which is fantastic. They pick up everything we've got. We'd be paying £400 a month at the moment for the dedicated server that we would need with the bandwidth that we would need. And UK2 pick up that free of charge. Plain and simply, we couldn't afford to do podcasts. We couldn't afford to do the Pocket Show, the Gamer Show, the Media Show, the Big Show, the Max Show, any of the shows at all on this network without support from UK2. They pick up everything. You've got to go to the sponsors page. You've got to click on their logo. There's a tracking link that sends you through to them. Then come back and get the offer codes. Use the offer codes because they won't be valid anywhere from anywhere else. We won't get credit for it. And save yourself a fortune and get great service. And I've noticed a couple of tweets this week where people have said they've gone for good tech support with UK2 because they are brilliant at tech support. Fill in a critical ticket, probably get your website back up within under half an hour. So they're absolutely brilliant. Please support UK2 because they support us. And please support Network Union as well. Click on their link because that's what it matters. We sell the click to the link. We don't sell the product. You send them the details. The other thing about Network Union I forgot to say was Network Union's policy is if you send them an email inquiry, your email is secure. They will not pass it on to a third-party supplier. Guaranteed. Okay? That is absolutely crystal. They will not start selling your email address around. So if you go and have a look and you sign up with an email, then do not worry. You will get no email from anyone else. No third parties, no nothing, no spam. It'll only come from Network Union. So well done. Please support both our sponsors because we would be lost without them.
Right.
Right then. It's the cool thing time. Righty, what you got for us? Waiters, what you got for us?
Well, coincidentally, in connection with Jeff's story that we discussed earlier about Mars, my cool thing is a book. Well, it's actually an audio book, but you can buy it in the kind of old-fashioned wordy format, if you like. But it's called The Martian, and I just finished it yesterday, and it was superb. So it's actually an audio book that I'm recommending.
Andy Weir, by any chance?
It is, yes. It's an absolutely superb book. I'm not going to give away too much, but essentially this happens in like the first chapter, so it's not a spoiler, but it's basically this guy gets, he's on a mission to Mars with five other people, and he gets left, and basically the book is just about him being on Mars and so on and so forth. I'm not going to give anything else away, but highly recommend it. The audiobook's really well done as well, well narrated. I got an Audible. So I'll put a link to both the Amazon book if you prefer it in that format. There's a Kindle edition should you want that as well. And also an Audible. Absolutely superb.
Good, cool thing, mate. Like that.
Cool.
Excellent. Capricorn 1 as well. Seminal Mars movie. You've got to watch it. It's a shit movie, but you've got to watch it.
it's a fun movie.
Elliot Gould. Yeah. Who else is in it? The one that's married to Streisand. And his lad's an actor now. But
Liberace,
there you go. He'll do. Capricorn 1, seminal movie. good pick, mate. Jeff, what have you got for us?
All right. Do you want something more tech or
anything that's cool that's tech based?
All right. Well, since it's tech based, then I can't do alcohol, but
no,
I just got
unless
this little
unless
bit.
It's a new brewing technique.
Well, no.
Formula?
Secret formula. If it's secret, I wouldn't know. So I don't know, but okay. So anyhow, I just got this a couple days ago, and what it is, it's a charge cable and sync cable for, lightning devices like, you know, like the iPhone and the iPad, and it's designed so it'll fit on a keychain. It has a little opening right there to go on your keychain, and it's flexible. So it's not going to break when it's in your pocket or in your bag on your keychain, and it just plugs into a USB connector right there. And now you can charge whatever it is that you have that uses a lightning connector.
Now, Griffin have some little tiny flexible ones like that, but they haven't got the angle and they haven't got the connection to your keychain.
Yes. So it's really cool the way they put it together. So you have the angle, so it's easier to use when your device is only this far away from your computer. And it's always on your keychain. So it's called the charge key, and it's from Nomad. And these are $25.
The only thing I'd worry about with that, Jeff, is if it's on your keychain, is the USB contacts on that look like they'd easily get scratched with the keys in your pocket.
I have thought about that too, and I am curious to see how this holds up. It seems to me like it would be really easy to have put something right there that just slides back out of the way so that the contacts are protected when it's in your pocket or in your bag.
I love how people come on This and the Mac Show and have a cool thing, and they have no idea whether it might actually be utter shite.
Well, so far, it's not utter shit. Ask me again in a couple weeks.
Exactly. But good pick, mate. Well done. Thank you. Sarah, what's your pick?
Well, I can honestly say that mine is not utter shite.
James Brolin says Bronwyn in the chat room. Thank you.
I absolutely love this. It doesn't actually do anything other than look good.
I know that feeling.
But it is tech related. I don't know if you know, but I'm sure you come across the Raspberry Pi. Well, I have one, and I've been doing lots of stuff with it recently. And I've recently bought a new case for it, which is clear Perspex. I don't know if you can see this. It is absolutely gorgeous. You can see it. It allows you easy access to all the different parts of the Raspberry Pi, but it's great. You can stand it upright and everything, so you can see inside to the Raspberry Pi. Absolutely beautiful. Only about a fiver. Absolutely love it. I could keep leaving the Raspberry Pi just in view, just so I can see it. Because it just makes the Raspberry Pi look so good.
Oh, you're saddo.
I know. I'm not one for just pretty things.
Have you got it that switches the lights on and off automatically and that kind of thing?
No, not yet. But I'm
working working on that program. I got you.
Now I'm working on some interesting stuff. I've got some things which may be of interest to people on the network that I'm working on with the Raspberry Pi. So watch this space.
Excellent. Good pick.
I have my Raspberry Pi running my NFL fantasy algorithms for to choose my team every week.
Oh, wow.
And how have you done?
I just missed out on the playoffs this season. So I came fifth instead. I need to be like in the top four for getting the playoffs. So I was happy with that. As a kind of a first go at it, I was happy with it.
Oh, okay, all right.
That's more down to the software rather than how good the Raspberry Pi is, though.
Oh, yeah. That's down to me writing the algorithms to do the crunching. Oh, yeah.
My mate had a BBCB when we were at school together, and he did he chose computing, and I didn't. I did 1 year of computing, and that was it. And I can do basic, and that's it. 1.10 clear at CLS, you know, and that's it. James wrote a little program for horse riding, and he put in the top 20 jockeys, the top 20 trainers, and a random number generator that went in with it, and he got like a 56% winning streak on that.
Wow.
It was really impressive. It was ultra simple as well. So I gave him 50p and he started losing it.
The thing I particularly like about Raspberry Pi, though, from a Linux user point of view, is that there's a Debian flavor of Linux, which is the operating system. So it enables you to do all sorts of other things, which you can do as a Unix as a Unix user. So it's like having a tiny little Unix computer. It's brilliant.
Can you put wheels on that and run it around a scale electrics track?
Probably. On the bottom, it's got things so you can apparently hang it on the wall. So easily you could put a couple of axles on that and stick wheels on that. I'm sure you could, Ewan.
I'm going back to the emails that we got, and clearly I am a wanker who knows nothing about tech. Because Debian, I thought we were back to Martians.
It's just a Linux distro.
Yeah, you could put a Minecraft server on it, Ewan, as we were discussing a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, no, my lad wants to do a Minecraft server, and I've had a discussion with Paul about how secure that would be, but also we need to set one up in the house. So,
oh yeah, you keep it completely internal. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
But if you set it up on a little Raspberry Pi in the house, you can do that.
I only found out the other morning he's been shooting people on Call of Duty with who were French or Italian or something. I said, well, I'll stick to the French and the Italians, mate. Don't shoot anyone else. Righty, what have you got for us, boy?
I know something I've been playing with today. One of the things I was kind of jealous of Android users, you had the SwiftKey keyboard on Android?
No. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's basically a highly responsive keyboard, but it learns what you type. It's highly predictive. But it's out today for iOS. Only as an app, but what you can do, you can type away to buggery, and it basically works so that everything that you're going to say, but also like Android, does it give you this little thing across the top where it gives you like
tilt it a bit, mate,
and all that sort of thing. So you can like, I do a lot of things at meetings on iPads and iPhones, and I'm typing away. When I get back, it's just a load of gibberish. But this is quite good at learning what I do and the things I want to type. But the best thing about this app is, as soon as you install it, you can integrate it with Evernote straight away.
That's good.
And the first thing it does, it scans your Evernote archive and looks at the kind of words and language that you use. So almost straight away, it's almost got like a database of all the kind of words and terminology. So kind of acronyms that we use at work, it knows all of those straight away. So I haven't got to program any of those in. And the most surprising thing about it, it's absolutely free. And you can get it to Evernote. You can use it in AirDrop. You can send it to mail and to the clipboard. So even though it's not a native keyboard for iOS, you can pretty much use it in any app. So I think it's yesterday or today, but it's free. So if you really spend a lot of time just typing away and don't want to have to look at the keyboard and what you're typing, it actually does a really good job of picking up what you're putting in.
Excellent.
Is it not just a trial version, the free version? Because I know I bought this on Android, and I had to after, I think it was 30 days or whatever, the free version. Actually, it does run.
Let me just double check. I don't think they do it as a... I think it's free.
Maybe they've released it differently on
iOS. It is free.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I really miss SwiftKey from my playing with Android devices. It was absolutely superb little keyboard.
It doesn't do the swipey bit where you can do your fingers yet, but all the kind of stuff is all in there. So it is good. It's pretty like, it's like it almost knows what you're going to say before you put it in. So
Windrider says, what's it called? SwiftKey.
SwiftKey Note.
Note. There we go. Excellent.
Ah, it's slightly different from the standard SwiftKey.
Yeah.
Now, some of you who follow me on Twitter may be aware of the fact that I'm sussing out getting a 3D printer, and I think I'm going to have one in time for the bash. It'll be at the bash as well, so you can draw and print some stuff as we go during the day, which is going to be so cool. But one of the things I've done is a lovely, lovely chap, GG Wilson on Twitter, is in New Zealand, and he's got me thinking about getting the printer, and he's also turned me on to a program called SketchUp. I drew something, which is something I want to make into a motorized camera rig to run on a taut line. And I sent it to him and said, you know, is this okay? And that night he printed it. So when I woke up the next morning, I got a picture of my thing that I'd drawn here in the UK, sent over to him as a SketchUp file, and he'd physically printed it on a 3D printer in New Zealand. Marvelous age we live in. I mean, that really is cutting edge. But my cool thing is SketchUp, because I'm not a CAD user. I've never used AutoCAD, and I'm not particularly good with that kind of stuff. But SketchUp is just as easy as you like. So I'll give you a quick demo live here as we go. If I want to draw myself a square or an oblong or any kind of shape, I can put it in here, draw it out, and then on the bottom, just in the corner, I can type in 200 millimeters by 200 millimeters, and there we go. I've now got a 200 millimeter square. And the shortcut keys, I've learnt the shortcut keys because I'm not a wanker, as we said last week. Now let's just say that I want to inset that. So there is an inset tool, and the inset tool lets me bring that in by any increment that I want, and it creates a new piece. Then I can get my tool to make three dimensional. And I can say I want to increase the size of that bit there. And let's say that's 31 millimetres that's come up, but I actually wanted it at 20 millimetres. I just type in 20 and it goes back to 20. Then I can select the outer edge here and click that and bring it up and say I wanted that at 10 millimetres. It's gone to 10.4, but not to worry. I can do 10.4. There we go, 10. So now I've got two three-dimensional shapes. And if I hold down that key, I can go around and I can actually have this three-dimensional shape and use it. Now, you're thinking, well, okay, that's fairly easy and fairly simple, but actually one of the things that I've done is go out and produce this thing. And it took me an hour or more to draw it, but I'm not a CAD user, I want to emphasize, and I still drew this shape in SketchUp. And that shape, because SketchUp is really, really good at output, will automatically output to your 3D printing software if you've got one of the mainstream 3D printers. It is absolutely brilliant, and it is easy as you like. So thank you, Dave Wilson, because, mate, you are absolutely superb. He's given me a load of support, and I sent that to him and said, how's this print then? And he said, print's just fine, except it's too big for the printer that he's got. But there you go. It's an absolutely brilliant application. You can draw your house. You can do whatever you want with it. And it took me 10 minutes to get to the stage of being watching the tutorials to be able to draw that item. And it took me an hour to draw that item. So SketchUp from Google. Price? Free of charge.
Oh, we like it.
You can't argue with that.
You can buy extra licenses, but from what I can work out, the extra licenses give you sod all. So don't. Go and get SketchUp from Google. Just download it. Stick it on your computer. You can do Windows. You can do Mac. I don't think they do a Linux version. In 10 minutes, you'll be drawing shapes, and you can output them in 3D, and you can print them straight away, overnight, in New Zealand, the opposite side of the frigging world. What a marvellous age we live in.
Not the future.
I was going to say, that's given me an idea. But I'll tell Jeff Bezos about it, otherwise he'll be onto it.
Well, you were saying about your thingy about the Raspberry Pi thing. If you actually go onto MakerBot, they've got three 3D files there of casings for Raspberry Pis, and you just download them, stick them into your printer, and they print. And because it's kind of a bit of an open source thing, it doesn't matter whether you've got the MakerBot or whether you've got the RepRap or any of that kind of stuff, there's usually converters out there that will get them to work just fine in any 3D printer. So I've got into it lately, and I'm going to get myself a 3D printer at the end of the month, I think, when I've got some time to sit and set it up. The only thing you can say is they come in kit form, and it says on them you do need some electronics experience and mechanical experience to get them set up. So I may be on the Skype to Dave, looking for a bit of support. Sorry, Dave. Free of charge, SketchUp from Google. Brilliant. Where can we
not
get a
from
whole
Google anymore, Ewan?
Sorry,
not from Google anymore.
Well, I think they're the people that you see there. It's something Industries, isn't it? But they owned it, and Google kind of took it over, and they've just kept it.
Well, no. What happened was that SketchUp started as a company here in Boulder.
All right.
And then Google bought them.
Yeah.
And then Google was going to kill SketchUp off eventually. And then whatever this other company is, they swooped in and bought it.
Ah, right.
So, yeah. So there's still ties back to Google, but this company is maintaining SketchUp independently of Google.
SketchUp is,
and I'm glad they
really
are, because
good.
That means it has a much better chance of a long, healthy life.
No, it's great. It's a fantastic piece of software. It would be devastating to see it go. SketchUp Pro is £378 for the license of Smell-O-Vision online. You don't need that. From what I can see, you do not need that. You just need to have a go with it. He also says he's a long-time CAD draftsman. You will absolutely make this fly, matey, if you go and get it. So, and what printer am I getting? That's brilliant. Jufro Jim says, what 3D printing? I'm getting the RepRap from RS Components. So there you go. £500.
It is only available for Windows and Mac.
Yeah.
Shame.
But, I mean, you don't need... I mean, if someone who's absolutely a real whiz in AutoCAD, if you're talking about what you need to link to a 3D printer, AutoCAD's too much, because AutoCAD's good enough to start building, you know, entire facilities full of automation. This isn't what you need for 3D printers. You need something that will make single components fairly easily, and this thing will. It's superb. So, very good. Get it. Worth every penny.
Just got it.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm just doing the same. Yeah.
You're in.
Yeah, I've just picked it up as well.
Paul, where can we get a hold of you? Wheatley.
Which one? All right. I'm Paul Wheatley on Twitter. You can get me on The Gamer Show on this network and The Pocket Show as well.
Pocket Show coming up on Monday?
Indeed. Yes, and we have Sarah and Jeff on, joined by Alan as well.
I've got to say, I like this format. Every week you have a Windows person, an iOS person, and an Android person, and you just talk anything that goes in your pocket, tablet, phone, whatever. It's good. I like that. I like it a lot. Good. Jeff, where are you, sir?
I am at macobserver.com, and I am on Twitter. What's my name there? Jay Gamut. And
who am I?
I don't tweet myself, so... You know, it's like, I don't call myself, so what's my phone number?
No, dude, you can't get away with that kind of crap. It's not like your own phone number type thing.
It's, sometimes I remember.
Stay off the gin, dude. Stay off the gin.
I'm screwed. Anyhow, so, yeah, Twitter, app.net, Jay Gamut, Fresh Brewed Tales, where I talk about coffee shops, lots of podcasts, Apple Context Machine, We Have Communicators, and then Monday... I'm on the Pocket Show. So thank you for inviting me onto that. I'm looking forward to it.
No, that's good.
The one he's looking forward to as well.
Ooh. Sarah, where are you, girl?
Yeah, as we've just said, I'm going to be on the Pocket Show too on Monday. You can get hold of me. Best place is on the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK with lots of other new stuff coming very soon.
Excellent. And lastly, but by no means least, where are you, Sick Note?
I'm at Paulum's on Twitter, BritishTechNetwork.com, and the next few days under a duvet.
Good man. Don't pass it on. If any of us catch anything, dude, you're in deep shit.
I'll give it to the wife. I'm in big trouble.
That's a different discussion, mate. Not one for people that are listening to this show. We'll be back again next week, Thursday as normal, I presume. We'll have to wait and see. Be something like that. And oh no, it won't be Thursday. Definitely won't be Thursday. It'll be Friday, because I'm going out for a beer with Rick McCorriston. He's in the chat room. Making a video, and we're going out for a beer afterwards and dinner. So it'll be Friday for the big show next week. So see you next week. Thanks for listening.